I'm so glad that you're doing this.
I am.
I know. I'm
so
glad we're doing it in person too. It's oh, it's.
I for years I put this podcast on hold and didn't do it at all.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't able to do it in person, either pandemic or transition of my own life. I was like, but I'm not near people who would be on the show.
Yeah.
And I refused to do virtual for years because I was like, it's not the, well, it's not the vibe of this.
No, totally.
I hope, and I feel this already, but you tell me, how cool is it that we fucking don't know each other at all? And we're about to like get to know each other and we're going to show that to other people.
Isn't that the magic of like getting to know? That's like the magic of life is getting to know new people.
I love it so much. And I feel like that takes a bit of fearlessness to do it with cameras pointed at you. So I want to say that I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, of course. No, I love it. I love shit like this. I would just do a circuit all day, every day. Just like bebop around people's podcasts, getting to know them.
Honestly, and this is the thing. This is why I'm a bad podcaster is because I think that is a totally legitimate career at this point.
I think it is too.
It is.
Just like,
there are people who that's all they do.
Yeah.
All they do is their own podcast. And then when they go on other people's podcasts and that's
podcasts.
Their life.
All they do is they podcast. You get a podcast.
It's
the whole thing.
Abs is very Oprah style. so... I think we've made it clear that we don't know each other. That's usually the thing I start with is, do I know this person or not? So they, you know, they get my bias out of the way. I also usually tell everybody that when I don't know somebody, unless they have come into my knowledge of in some way by the project or something they've done.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of research. I do a splash of research. I don't want to I want to learn from you. I want you to tell me. I don't want to read the internet. So I also, that's a way to get myself out of the fact that
like,
I don't
do any homework.
I'm going to put my foot in my mouth undoubtedly, but you got to treat me like someone who just doesn't know.
I don't know. I love it. I can't remember anything I've done. So this is going to be a riveting conversation.
It's great. Well, and the other thing that I think is fun too is, I've noticed this out of just habit of, you know, watching the episodes I've done. We almost never end up talking about like the projects,
yeah,
the film, the movie, the whatever, the play.
99.9% of the time, it's the least interesting thing about someone.
I let them talk about it if they want to talk about it.
Yeah,
and sometimes they have a really cool thing that, like, oh, that reminds me of when I did this thing, and it doesn't. And it usually, actually, I got to give them credit. Almost everybody, it doesn't come off too name droppy. Of like, I remember when I was.
I'm gonna drop every name I've ever.
You're welcome to. I want to get the big ones. That's why you're here.
Yeah, for the big ones.
It also feels weird because it feels like those cases when you listen to those podcasts, you see those interviews, you're like, well, am I interested in you? Or am I interested in the people that you did some other shit with? And I produce reality TV, so I don't know if you could help me in that business. Probably not, right? Yeah. Is that the thing you do?
Probably not.
Right. So we're going to start from the beginning. Yeah. I only have one stock question. Brianna, where are you from?
I'm from North Carolina.
Which I love.
I was born in Wilmington.
Okay.
And then I moved to Greensboro pretty soon after that. And then my parents now move back to Wilmington, so they're back there again. So when I go home, it's now Wilmington again.
You texted me today, and I saw that sweet 336.
That's sweet, sweet 336.
It really did. I got me a little bit, because I haven't seen it in a while.
It's pretty real. Whenever I'll tell people my number, and they're like, where is that? Who is?
It's a fun old school way that connects us that I think is interesting, because that's another thing too is I wonder, I don't even know what it's like because I've had the same phone number since I was like 15.
Yeah.
My cell phone. I don't know. Do they still assign it? Like you have to go into a store somewhere and you'd get a local one, right? It feels like at this point they just randomly give you a number.
Well, it depends. I think now I can't remember what North Carolina's moved on to now, like the triad or whatever they call it.
Right.
I don't know what they've change the area code too, but I don't think it's 336 anymore because there's just too much. There's too many people now.
They ran out.
I think they ran out of 336s.
Oh man, I'm not capable of doing that math, but that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of 336s. Yeah, there.
It's a big area.
Also, North Carolina has so many people in it.
Yeah.
Now especially. Granted, in comparison to LA, it has about the same amount as LA City does, but, you know, it's not.
Yeah, for a state that's over there in that region.
For a state that's down there. A
lot of growth.
Yeah, a lot of growth.
So what brought your family to that? Like, how many generations had you been there? Would your parents move there from somewhere else?
They both moved there from New York. So both my parents are New Yorkers.
Got it.
And God knows why they chose North Carolina to move to.
You don't know? Have you ever asked them?
I did. They said my mom, I think she said that my dad wanted to follow a pastor down there. They had met some pastor in New York, and I mean, it was like
late, I was gonna say,
it was
say,
like 80s in New right. York. It was a little. They're both artists, like they're, you know, to quickly get dark. They're all Go. Of their friends were, you know, passing away from AIDS, and it was yes. just, it was just like not the time to be in the city, and a very scary time to be in the city and be an artist. So I think they sort of like took this cue of like, now is our, we can get out and we can, you know, start a life somewhere else. I don't think my mom was thrilled about going to North Carolina. Originally, I think she was sort of just like, sure.
It felt safer from the wave of trauma they were experiencing.
Yeah, totally. And it's a bold move on their part. I mean, two like born and bred New Yorkers just jumping ship to the South is a little bit of a stretch. And they were in their early 20s. Like it was a lot. But they went down there and you know, had me eventually. And then my dad actually ended up moving back to New York. So I kind of split my childhood between the two.
Got you. What was work for them that they were able to do what they did?
My mom was in fashion.
Okay.
And
away from New York in fashion. Of course she wasn't thrilled to go to North Carolina.
But
had you said furniture, she's like, I didn't know High Point was there.
Funnily enough,
it's gotta be one.
It is now. She actually is a designer now, an interior designer. So it all came full circle. It really paid off for her in the long run. But she actually ended up working in textiles. So okay. North Carolina has like that huge denim
that's actually great.
Industry. So she ended up getting a job for Wrangler, who had their headquarters in Greensboro for, I think it's VF Corp.
That old mom and pop shop, yeah, Wrangler.
Yeah, that old tiny Cone Mills, that tiny little denim company.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So she ended up working for them eventually down the line and just sort of worked her way up to that.
Cool.
And then my dad, he used to be the stock photographer for Tiffany & Company.
Okay.
So like all the old Tiffany & Co., like, you know, magazines you'd flip through. He took all those photos.
Whoa.
And then he kind of tried to be a photographer down here and then eventually moved his way into marketing and took that.
You hear the
turn.
Brand and you think money. Is that true for him as a photographer at Tiffany? Did he like make a really good living for them?
I don't
from
think
them.
I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, you didn't
see that in your childhood. Like you were lavishly because your dad was like the Tiffany photographer.
I was constantly covered in diamonds.
Right.
Yeah, at all times. A day didn't go by where I wasn't head to toe covered in diamonds.
Oh my God. This reminds me of Arrested Development and they have that cream that they rub on each other that's just like all diamonds.
Yeah, this is the glitter. Oh,
yeah,
God,
the glitter.
Yeah,
oh,
that was,
goodness.
That was me, basically.
That's funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I also think that particular time, art was not profitable
right
back then. You just did it for the sake of like, you know,
because you liked it. Yeah.
And especially I think something like stock photography just felt very industrial back then. It was just like, right, you were the person that they called because they probably didn't know who else to call
and they wanted to use you until you retired or died.
Exactly.
Yeah,
because they could just keep,
they don't
want
to have to hire another photographer. Exactly. So it's not like they're bringing in interviews on a regular basis for your dad's work.
Yeah.
That's got to be tough.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. When he moved down here, I think he spent a long time just sort of floating about trying to figure out what the right median was for him. But, you know, it's like the artist life, both of them. They are both very, very, very creative people. So I'm amazed that they got as far as they did and have been as successful as they have because – you know how creatives are.
I do. I've met some.
We're like little skittish cats sometimes. We're just like, what?
Well, I think that one of the biggest things I've noticed of people who grow up with parents in creative fields versus people who lean maybe further on the spectrum, because of course that's not a binary thing. There's really like a lot of jobs you don't think about have these really creative elements, or you could be the person who's doing the creative thing at that one company and you don't realize. But I mean, like full industries that are kind of built on creativity, music, you know, art of different kinds. The people who experience that through their parents early, the only real thing that makes a difference is exposure, because the parents have this automatic, like, oh, this is interesting in this way. I better show it to them.
Mm-hmm.
I better let them experience it.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's a, it's a big difference, because a lot of times you end up with kids that are artists because their parents were so clinical or so just type A that they had to go out and take a damn dance class, something.
Yeah.
But you had it like at home already with that creative energy.
Yeah. I definitely lucked out in that sense. And my mom actually ended up remarrying my stepdad, who is a very practical man.
Mm. She swung the other way, as they say.
But he's also he still is like he's very enigmatic. He has a big personality. Like he's a cool dude, but his brain very much so works in the exact opposite way as hers. And it was really wild growing up. And, you know, it wasn't that it was like a constant battle, but like you could just see very clearly there were two different paths in the house. And
my mom did the opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My dad is totally the practical dude. Uh-huh. And she swung to the like long haired Mexican dude who like did pinstriping on motorcycles like to draw for fun. My dad doesn't draw, dance,
your
stuff
sounds rad. I mean, I'm sure. He's I'm super sure cool, dude. Rad, but like, yeah that sounds, yeah, he's sounds on my alley.
He's definitely, and I give a lot of credit to, I love, it's weird because a lot of people are like, oh, that's a drag. You grew up in a broken home or some stuff like that. You hear stuff like that. And it's like, you're so blessed when you end up in, honestly, if you can just shake it up in some way where there's still a lot of love and support mm-hmm. along the way, you don't feel like it's your fault that things are changing, you know, that stuff that is a trouble for kids who don't get it. But if you get it, it's like, oh, if you have like two moms or if you have two moms and a dad or two dads in different. I mean, there's so many dynamics where it's like actually when it's diverse, you get a lot of really cool shit.
No, completely. And my mom remarried a man. My dad ended up, he had always been, I think, out and then had just married a woman. And then he went back to dating men. And so I grew up in a very, very, very diverse. A
lot of different perspectives going on. A lot of perspectives
happening there. And then between being in the South and then being back up in New York, like I literally just got sort of like the gamut of the East Coast from left to right. Like right. I want everything.
Siblings?
No, just me. So I got all the attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope, right?
No, it is. I liked it for sure. I in hindsight, I'm kind of like, I'm glad I didn't have another sibling. I want one now only because I'm the only child. And I'm like, once they're gone, I'm like, it's just going to be me. So but it's a little lonely, but.
Yeah, but it's a total gamble on if you click with them, you know?
Totally.
Like I've got a half sister who's like 9 years older than me through my mom previous marriage before my dad. And we hate each other. Just isn't brutally so, are like, no, but it. Here's the thing. I want to get along with her, but she sucks.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change anytime soon because she's been the same person. Just like the things we don't like about each other are so deeply part of who we are.
Yeah.
And it's fun for me to be catty and silly about it. But in all seriousness, I really wish I got along with her. But that's not about us being unable to reconcile because we're not capable of that. It's about the fact that we're not compatible people. It's not good for us to be around each other. And that's just as possible with siblings. You never know.
Totally. I mean, the things they should actually teach us in school. That being one of them. Just like, hey, just because A, B, and C does not mean you actually need to keep this person around. Like you can make whatever choice you want for
yourself.
That's
so tough. And it can be tough culturally, right? Like my wife's Korean. They don't do that.
No.
They only kick you out if you like break one of the rules. Otherwise, you're at dinner every single time because you have to be. You can't just like so go wild? Be somewhere else.
Yeah. My mom's family is Puerto Rican and it's a very massive, massive family. There are, I don't even know how many of us there are. Like, and so in theory, there are probably many relatives of mine out there, but because we're, you know, they did move away from home and like, I am the only child. It does feel like I'm very much so just my own little entity that's been floating through the world for the last 35 years.
So you're floating around in North Carolina. What's the, it's so interesting, right? Because you always wonder, are you going to do the thing that mom and dad do, or do you find your own thing in the same kind of universe? And so what's that path for you? Are you seeing photography as a kid is interesting? Are you seeing like what mom does with fashion and textiles is interesting? Or like, what are you gravitating towards as a kid? Like what was interesting to you?
Definitely photography.
Cool.
But that's still, I mean, I think that's all just more about like my infatuation with visuals in general.
Yeah.
And I think that translates heavily into being an actor is just sort of like this, it's all just a accumulation of visual and presentation. I think that's sort of like, it just works with my brain.
Yeah.
Fashion, I've never really, I mean, I like fashion, but it feels like such a wasteful way to express yourself. I'm going to get a lot of fight on that, but I'm a much more practical person. I love fashion, but I think the fashion industry has just created a lot of waste. And I think because that was the industry she worked in, like, I just didn't, it didn't resonate with me in the way that something that was a little bit more organic did creatively.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and fashion's great and people look cool and like, you all look great, but I don't know, it just didn't strike a chord with me. That being said, the visual presentation of fashion is, again, because I'm all obsessed with visuals, it is beautiful, but just didn't.
It didn't click that same way.
Just didn't click the same way.
I totally get that.
I think too, even between the two of them, I don't know why I wanted to be an actor other than I just was like, well, I want to be Robin Williams when I grow up.
Good choice.
I was like, I'm pretty sure I just want to be that guy, but a lady.
He was mine. 100%. Yeah. It makes so much sense. We're like the same age. It's hard to describe to anybody. And this is one of my favorite things about art. This is one of my favorite things about talking about art with other people. When you experience a piece of art or a phenomenon that happens culturally at a certain age, mm-hmm. you share that with other people who experience it at that age in a way that no one else really gets to.
Yeah.
And it sucks for me because my favorite art and the stuff I get really excited about connecting with people about is mostly backwards from my age, not forwards, meaning like I love Die Hard and Beverly Hills Cop. And like, I want to talk about movies that came out before I was born.
Uh-huh.
And I know them all really well because I hung out with my parents mm-hmm. who did watch that stuff.
Totally.
As a mostly only child. My sister wasn't around a lot.
Oh my God.
And that becomes your stuff. As a kid.
Yeah, no.
But Robin Williams in the 90s when you were a kid.
Imprinted. Like full imprint. There's no way around it. I in my mind, it's the go-to reference for so many things that happen to me now as an adult.
A lot of people I think are Robin or Jim Carrey.
Yeah, totally.
I think you're one of my best friend, Brandon. Totally a Jim Carrey kid, and I was a Robin Williams kid.
See, I got on the Jim Carrey train later in life.
Mm.
His stuff when he got probably like 35, 40, that's when I got on that bandwagon.
What's the Robin Williams stuff that like top, what's the top two things that when you were a kid that you're like over and over you watched it, maybe you had it memorized?
Oh, Hook. Hands down.
Oh,
hands down.
I knew I would like you so much.
I can recite that movie word for word. All the way through. I fucking love that movie.
I hope you take this as a compliment. It's meant as I think you will. You have like dope ass Lost Boy energy.
Oh, see, that's all I want for my life.
It's real.
Okay, good.
100%.
Then I'm doing it.
If you were like, if I'm living that life, then you are. Because I just met you and it is there.
Oh my God, I love it. Perfect. Then I've succeeded and that's all. I came to do what I did.
That's so great. Dustin Hoffman is the best Captain Hook of all time.
The whole cast is just insane.
And Julia Roberts is in it.
Julia Roberts. God. Maggie Smith, who has somehow been the same age for 40 years.
What? And then you see her like Harry Potter and you're like, how are you?
That's the same person. That's the same crazy. Age person.
You know, Steven Spielberg hates that movie. He considers it like the one he like screwed up. He doesn't like it. It's his like least favorite of all time. It was heartbreaking to me when I heard that. I kind of see it on your face right now.
What does he know anyway?
Yeah, right? Thank you.
What is he fucking
That's
know?
The argument I've been trying to make in this town.
Okay,
I refuse to see The Fabelmans because of what he said about Hook.
I didn't see it. I'm never going to see it. Fablemans.
That's so wild. Okay, let's talk about you. I love that. That's so good. So what then is the move on the acting? How early does that start? And then what takes you to like school of the arts, like to go to school for it?
It started pretty early. I went to Page High School in Greensboro.
Okay.
And they did not have much of a, I don't know. I'm not a real good learner in the classic sense.
Me either.
And you know, the majority of education in this country is not built for people with any brain that isn't just fact-based.
Did you get bad grades?
Oh, horrific.
Me too.
But I also was in AP classes at the same time. Like the things I was good at, I was really good at. And the stuff that I was terrible at, I was horrific at.
What were you really bad at?
Like any kind of math.
Yeah.
Any kind of math and science, which is funny because I also have like a weird thing where I can add without having to look at a calculator. It's
you'd
like,
think
it's
that'd
like,
be helpful.
Like, yeah, you would think it'd be helpful. It is actually as an adult.
I'm sure it is in your
I
life.
Can do, like, I can do percentages. It's like, I can do that kind of shit. Like on
that's
a fly.
That's dope.
Which is a great skill to have.
That's but, the like, thing they're trying to teach us in those classes. So I know, it's like, you kind of already had it.
So clearly it was in there, but the rest of math, I just could not get behind. But like AP history, AP, like that kind of shit. I loved history as
stories.
A kid. Yeah. Again, stories. But the school itself, like, it was a public school. It had a theater program. It wasn't great. But Greensboro itself had this place called Weaver Academy, which is sort of a trade school by actual nature. And it was in downtown. And it was basically sort of accumulation of all these kids from all the public schools around North Carolina in that area. And they would get bussed in, and it would be where they learned whatever trade they wanted to, and or they went to the theater department, which was called ETC. Ensemble Theater Company, and you basically spent the afternoon twice a week or three times a week at this ETC theater company, just like learning and rehearsing and doing plays and theater stuff.
So cool.
It was so cool. And I got into that when I was a sophomore in high school. So it was pretty like after that, it just like I hit the ground running. And then once I got into ETC, I was there for 2 years. At the end of my junior year, I had gone to the summer sessions at School of the Arts for the last 2 years. So I was pretty well versed in the world of
right.
School of the Arts. And then I was with my teacher one day, and he sort of like handed me this application. He was like, you should apply to School of the Arts for your senior year. And I was like, well, I'm going to be here for my senior year, and I'm going to be the lead of the
of course
of the Ensemble Theater Company show. And he's
a
like,
choice
no. he's
the
like,
best actors yeah, around the company country have to make.
Yeah, it was rough. Do I stay or do I go? And so I went. I bailed real hard.
Right.
But I got into yeah. I don't even remember like. Did we audition? They must have made us audition.
I would imagine, yeah.
Like, it was such an odd...
Bob Moyer?
Bobby Moyer.
Yeah, so this is pre-Kelly Maxner. Yep. Bob Moyer ended, like, right after you left.
Yeah,
I think he
yeah,
did one more year.
I think he did one more year, and then I think Tanya took over for maybe, like, a
maybe,
hot
yeah.
second. But yeah, I ended up just, I went for my senior year there, and then I honestly had spent so much time over the summers. I think when I had been there the summer before my... senior year of high school, and there was like 3 days that I moved out of the dorms, and then I moved right back in to the exact same dorm room that
that's
I was in for
wild.
The entire summer. Yeah, it was really funny.
Is that part of why your what was your decision making like when it came to undergrad then? Was it did you get into school? Did you try to go to School of the Arts?
I did. I was waitlisted initially
okay.
For School of the Arts. I eventually got in.
Okay.
But by that point, I had already said yes to someone else. And then I had a bunch of other options that just sort of like at the time seemed a little bit more interesting. Because mm-hmm.
You'd already been there so much.
I just spent 3 years practically.
Totally.
Just like in that world of it. And I loved it. But I was also just like, let's see what else is out there.
It's like 20 minutes from your house.
Yeah. So close. It's so close.
Yeah. That's the yeah, big
you
thing,
gotta,
right?
You gotta like bebop away for a little bit.
You got to go to this school and get so much from it in such an important time in your academic, but more importantly, your artistic
yeah.
life is you get to really get that exposure. I went to high school in Texas. You're lucky if you have any kind of little academy at the school that gets extra funding.
Yeah.
But the like go to art school before college wasn't a thing.
Well, what's weird too, it's like what nobody really seems to understand about it is that it's like it was not even the idea of art school that you think. Like, I feel like you say art school and people are like, oh, you're just like hanging out in a room and like talking about your feelings. You're like, no, man, every second of my day as a 15-year-old was planned from 7 a.m. to 7 o'clock at night.
It's conservatory high school.
Yeah, it was brutal at times. Like, I was a child in charge of making sure my schedule happened. So, like, by the time that was over, I had already kind of hopped ahead a few years in terms of what was expected of me and how to build a routine and
maturity.
How to, yeah, like, I was just ready to do something else.
And you probably skyrocketed, I'm guessing, you tell me if this is true, you probably skyrocketed in confidence because you realized that your worth was not tied to the academic performances that you were having in the other schools. Because
totally.
You're look at them seeing my value because I am crushing in this other stuff. Like people are being like, wow, like that was good. This is, well, good job.
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to just going from math to science being like, man, I guess I'm dumb. And you're like, but I don't feel dumb.
I guess I'm just an idiot.
No, but I'm trying to say that that's my experience.
It's true. Yeah.
They tell you with those numbers, 61, 59, everybody. Mm-hmm. And your other friends who you hang out with, you're like, he's not that much smarter than me. But there's some disconnect happening. And whether it's ADD, whether it's whatever you've got going on, it's something that the people who are assigned to help you learn are not really sure how to get past because they only know this one way to teach you.
Totally.
I went to, like I said, school in Texas, but then I went to high school in New York.
Okay.
And went to one of those public acting schools that you can go to. LaGuardia, but another one. And I got all A's.
Yeah, imagine that.
Because I'm good at that. And I'm bad at the other thing. Why won't you just let me do that? And I've been telling you for years.
Let me do this.
Let me take a test too. Because also what I'm really bad at personally is homework. Because I hate everything about this thing you make me do all day. And by the time I get done, I really just want to be done. Because you already took my whole day away.
Yeah.
So, like, can I just be done? They're like, no, you need to go home and keep doing this for the next 2 hours, three hours. I'm like, no. Then the next day I show up and they're like, where is it? I'm like, I forgot. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to fail. I'm like, that's a shame. Like, I'm just not in
it. I'm the exact same. My little neurodivergent brain has such an, you tell me to do something and I immediately am like, okay. Sure.
Lost boy.
Yeah. Now that you say that, it's the perfect way to describe it. I have had this issue. And what's funny is that particular issue or whatever you want to call it translated into even art school in college. Like I was put on academic probation so many times.
For doing what?
Because people would tell me to do something or try something. And I would just be like, no, it doesn't work for me. And they'd be like, well, try it. And I'd be like, I did try it. It didn't work.
Yeah.
It was just so.
And then they're like, what are you paying us for?
And I'm like, I don't know. You tell me. Like, literally, right. You just go back and forth in circles for hours, just being like, you fucking tell me. But again, when you did have someone who knew how to talk to you, it worked. You'd have these breakthroughs that made it all worth it. And I will say, hands down, art schools gave me teachers who had those breakthrough moments with me more than anyone else.
You got a better shot.
Completely.
And it's a vocabulary thing.
And also they know. It's like, it's so hard to try and grade creativity at that age because it's like so much of the programming that you're learning is practical skills and just like things you need to know in order to like speak better, things you need to be able to move your body this way.
Right.
But the rest of it is like, you can't tell me that I'm failing at this because it's just me doing a thing that you asked me to do.
Yeah.
And there's no way you can grade that.
You know, that's why I think that the LGBT community gravitates towards arts because there is a notion of challenging binary things included in art automatically. And so the convention, the conservatism that it is this way because it is, it's on a scale, it's this or that, it's black and white, whatever. Art fundamentally, that's a worthless way of thinking. It gets you nowhere in that whole thing, whether you're going to make art, enjoy it, watch it, do it, whatever.
Yeah.
If you think of it in those terms of like, well, is it a 78 or is it a 61 on the, what you like, the useless way of thinking.
So I ended up going to CalArts.
Right.
CalArts has a grading system that is ruthless. It is pass, high pass, low pass, no pass. That is how you are graded at CalArts.
That sounds like a comedy sketch.
It felt like a comedy sketch.
Like just the idea that pass is in all of the titles.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to say fail.
Yeah, they're like,
you so badly they don't want to say that you failed.
Fail, you just didn't pass. You didn't not pass. You didn't not pass. Like they found every way to not say something.
Right. Like, it's kind of clever and also insulting.
But somehow I still was on academic probation 1 year for passing, but no, I don't, hard to
right.
say.
Right. Well, you say. Didn't pass pass.
Yeah, I didn't
you
pass
need a
double, pass.
You need a triple pass.
Yeah.
Or triple bypass. It's got to be one of those.
Yeah, it's got to be one of them. Somebody, one of the passes. One of the many, many passes.
So you, You stay out here after CalArts?
I did, yeah. I didn't want to initially. I wanted to go back to New York. But I was just like, I already moved across the country. Like, why? I'm never going to do this again. I might as well stay here and just be here. And so I also, when I was in school, I had spent probably the summer after my sophomore year was my first summer that I stayed out here. Mm. So after my sophomore, junior, and obviously senior year, I started working in the industry and I was a PA and I just started, you know, doing background work, that kind of stuff. And so once I graduated, like I had my SAG card from doing background work. I was just sort of already in it. So
my wife got hers too from doing background.
Yeah, so you have to like
tell people that's a thing.
People,
because there's such a little like, don't do it.
Oh,
don't be an extra.
People can fuck up. You know what happened is like I had that when I graduated and I booked one of the first things right out of school when no one else could because no one else was SAG.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm like, you can knock it all you want, but those vouchers, also, I'll tell you what.
SAG background rate for the work you put in on the day. Not bad.
No.
It really isn't too bad.
It's really not terrible.
So my wife went to conservatory in San Francisco for classical voice.
Oh, right.
But then when she graduated, she didn't really want to do that shit anymore.
Yeah.
And she was kind of a wash. She's just graduated literally like last weekend with her master's to be a therapist.
Oh, cool.
But in between that journey, she was just here in LA where she's from. And I've tried to tell so many actors this. It's like, there's so much stuff for you to do that gets you on a set, that gets you in the mindset of being in the business and being around where it's happening.
Yeah.
That isn't in the service industry. Not knocking it.
No.
It is a fine business.
I love and tips.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
But it also is limited in how much it is going to help you get better at the thing that you want to get better at.
Yeah,
and there's so many things. Background. She was a hand model.
You like, can do so much.
Union hand model. Crazy weird. That's even a thing. I thought that was a joke in Zoolander. And it turns out it's like a whole thing. So I love that. What? All right, I'll ask you because I don't normally hit resume, but this is fun for me. What did you PA on?
Oh gosh.
What's like a thing that you're like,
I mean, the first thing that I ever PA'd on was The Fast and the Furious, which I think was number 4 or 5. It was the one after Tokyo Drift.
Okay. Yeah. That's
I don't
got,
I don't know. I don't
that's
know.
That's 4, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause Tokyo
was
Drift was
yeah,
3.
Yeah. It was 4. And
I'm not
was,
an expert in that department either, but I think we're on the same page.
But that was the first thing I ever did. And that was literally just hours and hours and hours of me in the middle of the night in downtown Los Angeles, standing on a street corner, locking up pedestrians as if there would be pedestrians in the middle of the night on 7th and the middle of
just
downtown.
Just telling homeless people not go pretty turn
much,
around.
Yeah, pretty much that. Or there were a couple dive bars on the main street we were shooting on. And so like you'd have to like field drunk people back into the building every now and then. But otherwise, yeah, it was that. And then I worked on a lot of really, really cool things. And all of those people that I met then are, the majority of them are still my friends. And they're also producers and writers and people that I still work with.
Say it so I don't have to say it. Like, what is the benefit to that? Because I feel like all my actor friends are like, let me, you know, they tell me they're going to move out here. Obviously, I work in reality TV. Anyone who listens to this knows that. They also know I can't help you. I don't know anything. I'm not involved in script. Let me make it clear. Right now, I have a job. That's how much I don't know what's going on. I'm not involved in that because it's not my actual industry. But I am out here and people always have questions. And what I say to them with best I can is join Central Casting, do some background.
Yeah,
and don't be afraid to do production work.
No, not at all. Honestly, the people I know who started in production versus even just background or going straight into acting are hands down the most well-rounded, most level-headed people in this industry who are also now actors.
I agree with that.
Because you just know what it takes. Like to get that other kind of look on the other side of the mirror of yourself and to see just how much work goes into any moment that you are doing in front of the camera will blow your mind. And I'm not saying like people get it, like they know how much work is going on, but to be in the trenches of it all, and especially back, like I don't want to say that things have gotten wildly better, but when I was first going into PA work, we were working, I mean, I worked on True Blood, which was a great experience. It was also one of the hardest shows in the world to shoot because 99.9% of the time we were, you know, with tons of background and or in the middle of a field somewhere in the middle of the night.
Night.
And it was night because, you know, vampires.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. You know, I'm thinking of that show in my head. I'm like, it's got to be a pain in the ass.
It was freezing. It was in a swamp 45 or some miles away, you know, almost to Simi Valley. And then you had to, like, do a full turnaround the next day and get to a location in Woodland Hills. And nobody realizes, like, that takes 6 hours in and of itself just to pack up one location and then get to the next one. And by that time, it's already call time for the next day. So, it's that kind of logistic stuff that you learn that you're just like, you have no idea until you do it.
I got so triggered when I was watching the last season of Game of Thrones and they did the episode with the war in the night at the ice. But I don't know the shit really well. But the big battle where it's all in the dark and they're all fighting in the dark and it's like the big last battle, whatever. Yep. And they did a special after where they were like, took a month to shoot this episode every night with like the seventh day off sometimes and like, but not everybody. And they're like, they're and I'm literally like, I'm sure there are people all over the country like, this is so cool. Thanks for doing this, guys. And I'm sure there are people who to this day see that documentary and just, it feels like they were at war for real.
Yeah.
They're like, you don't know, you weren't there. It was fucking. Yeah. Not fun. No, that's why I'm like not mad about the reality TV gig. And people ask me if I want to work in scripted. I'm like, it sounds harder.
It's
intense. Some of the stuff you've been on is like pretty intense to shoot.
Yeah, it's the trauma bond is real.
do you feel that? Okay. So let me spin that then, because I do know some of the stuff you've worked on, and I think about if you are on a show like Walking Dead, where everybody is fundamentally sweat. You're in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, you're actually living the reality of the show.
You're there. You're covered in mud and sweat and all this stuff. Do you say, and I'm not looking to like call people out, but I'm saying like, do you feel a difference between certain actors when they get in that kind of environment versus people who have been working on mostly sound stages or some shit like that? Because you were in the mud before you were even taken off as an actor. So you've already kind of got that.
Yeah.
We're here in it.
I definitely think that mentality helped. I will say, I don't know what sort of special sauce they're working with on that show, but like they managed to get really amazing people across the board where at least to me, I mean, everybody has their moments and things get tough and, you know, but for the most part, every experience I ever had on that show, everyone who was involved, be it, you know, cast, crew, creative, whatever, just went all in every single day. Like there was no question of like, this is terrible. It's like, yeah, no shit. It's terrible. It's fucking Atlanta. It's 100 degrees out and a 90% humidity point. Like it's terrible. And you're covered in mosquito bites.
They're not going to take a risk on someone who's not going to hack it out there.
No. And you know, I'm sure that
smart.
I'm sure that there are,
they're not new.
Yeah. Completely. And some of the smaller roles, yes. Like you pop in for a day and do a role and they can gauge pretty quickly, I think, whether or not you jive with the fit of the show.
Right.
But I definitely think that, you know, if you can go there and just like show that you're a gamer and you can just like hang with the toughest of them. Like my first day on that show was with Alana Masterson and we shot a stunt fight that they ended up using all of our footage from, where we just were like beating the shit out of each other in the woods for 6 hours. And I loved it because that's what I was trained to do. I was trained in stunt choreography and doing like a pratfall here and a pratfall there. Like we love it. It's hilarious. But like working on it in a way that I could put it into circumstances that were that real, because we were literally in the woods and I was like tripping over roots and I like smashed my face into the dirt. Like it's just all of this. It just was so fun. And I think they only managed to hire people who think it's fun.
I think you're totally, that totally makes sense to me. And I've worked on a few things like that where when I got hired, they were transparent about that in a not boastful way, but in a like, just so you even know, the fact that you're in this room talking to us right now is like, we don't let everybody in this room. There are plenty of people who want to be in this room who even want to talk to us to like be here. And they weren't trying to like be like, so kiss our ass about it. They were just being like, we're protective of this.
Yeah.
This show's been on for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And it means a lot to us, not just because we love making it for the fans. We do.
Yeah.
We like coming back to work every year. And you know how that happens? Not only do we have to make a great thing, but working here has got to be great.
Yeah.
It's got to be worth it. It's true. It's hard to make a great thing.
Yeah.
And if you're going to all be here and make a great thing, we need to walk away being like, it was hard, but it was worth it. And I want to go back next year. We don't want to have to drag everybody through however many seasons. And I think it's a skill set that I, even as a producer, man, it makes me feel young. It makes me feel naive because I'm like, how do you protect something so big that millions of people fucking rely on you to deliver on?
I know. It's wild. That's what I'm saying. That show is, it's an anomaly. It really is. It's, they did something really unique with it. And it's still going. That's the thing, is like, it just keeps spiraling into more and more. And it's like an ever evolving entity. But actually, this morning I was out on the old picket line,
of course,
down at Culver Studios with all of my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. writers and producers and whatnot. And we were all sort of chatting as we were walking around, and it was just like, we struck gold. Like, that's another show where that show arguably is a little easier in the sense of we were on a soundstage for the majority of stuff. And it was a little bit more of a controlled environment. We also shot it in LA, so everybody got to go home at night to their actual houses. But again, like, it's so rare to get that perfect storm. Mm. And I feel very lucky that a lot of the shows that I've been able to pop into have just been these really perfect storms of fantastic people who are all somehow in the same place and working on the thing I'm working on.
Do you seem like a really, like, down to earth, modest person, but like, I mean, you got to also take a compliment there, right?
Yeah.
You're allowed to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm getting better at realizing that it might have something to do with me too.
I don't feel like an imposter when you're in the room full of amazing people.
Totally. There are a couple times recently where I've just been in situations and I've like looked around and I'm like, how the fuck did I get here?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Great. Yeah.
I think if you totally skip that step, I'm worried a little bit about you. I think that moment of reflection is key. Like, so when I graduated school, I really wanted to go to TV and no one really knew what to tell me. And I ended up at Comedy Central by like the summer.
Okay.
Out of the drama school.
Yeah.
And so it felt like, but I'm not supposed to, shouldn't there be this big transition where I figure out how to be a theater kid that gets to TV?
No.
And then no. Because they interviewed me.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other people. And I did like 4 rounds of interviews for that. And that's what the people in my life kept telling me, as I was telling them, like, I don't know if I belong here. I've been out of school for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I didn't go to film school. Like, I know everyone else who interviewed for this did. But everyone kept telling me, it's like, well, did they just grab your shit out of a stack or did you talk to them? I was like, I did 4 rounds of interviews. They're like, you belong there.
Yeah, they want you there.
Who the fuck else is going to tell you that you do? They are the people who pick the people.
Completely.
God is going to come down and be like, my son, you belong. It's like, what are you waiting for? Go to
actually,
work.
Not you, not here. I'm going to take you back out.
You keep asking, bitch. It's going to be a problem.
It's so true. It's like, I don't know. But I think that also, too, it's that particular mentality is just such a is a much larger conversation about the way we frame things in the United States, about these like levels of achievements and how, you know, some things are on pedestals and other things are in the sewer. Like, it's just so much of this country revolves around like, well, you got to get here if you're going to be anything. And then once you get there, you got to get there if you're going to be anything. And then once you're there, if you fall back down here, then that means you're worthless. Like, it's such a fucking rat race around here. And when you take that away, that sort of like mindset that's been drilled into us, I feel like you realize, oh no, it's just a bunch of people who are all just trying to figure something out at the exact same time in the same place. And hopefully it works. And if it doesn't, they're going to replace you and figure out new things. But like, it has nothing, the eliteness and the allure of these like upper echelons is not real at all. Like they are just people like you and I who might have been in a position longer and maybe have more, you know, things under their belt, but for the most part, they're the same brains are working through the same problems. Like,
I think that is so true. And I think I spent 6 seasons on Dancing with the Stars.
Uh-huh.
And on that show, we can all, I think, admit it usually catches people on this trajectory in their career or on this trajectory in their career.
Absolutely.
It's not universal. There are exceptions. There's like weirdly like, wow, they're on that. They're like kind of really popular right now. But mostly it's like, oh, who is that? And then you look them up. And you're like, oh, they have this niche audience and that's growing. And that's very interesting. Yeah. Or you're like, oh, I remember them.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. That's the whole thing of the show, right?
Completely.
So in working on that show, which I mostly am not allowed to specifically talk about, because like working on all reality shows is like working for a magician and you sign everything saying like, I can't. But I will say a general observation about celebrity that I have picked up in all that time there. And I was in dance rehearsals with them all day. That's what I did. So those two experiences are so similar. And that's part of why they're both on the show. Because there is this kind of extra effort being put out to either increase or reverse maybe what's happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of people who I think get that call for that show and are like, not yet.
Yeah.
Or
one day.
Maybe back, you know.
Yeah.
Like Zendaya was on that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think she's going to go back on it right now.
I think she's doing all right.
You know what I mean?
She's a little busy.
Yeah.
It's true.
And so you spend all of that time there, and I tell you, man, I wish I could bottle that experience of that disillusionment and hand it to everybody who's like so.
There is nothing.
You can't give it to anyone.
There's nothing better than having that breakthrough moment. I'm not gonna, it sucks because as somebody who grew up sort of idolizing this idea of being an actor and being a performer, it doesn't matter if it's stage or film, you have these sort of idols that you look up to.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have that shattered, I think is probably just a qualm with growing up because you get older and you realize your parents are people too. Oddly enough, weird. People are
silence!
People.
Silence!
No. but I think like once you have that moment and are able to get over it, and once you sort of have the biggest thing for me is I've had to kind of come to terms now with this realization that even the thing that I love and I want to do is very much so wrapped up in this completely absurd concept of life and importance. And if I continue going down this path and being an actor, I think a large portion of it is going to still involve the media and the interaction and the influence of it all. And that's a weird thing to kind of grapple with because it's like, I know it doesn't fucking mean anything to me personally.
Well, and you're like, also in that generation of people where we're the last people who remember what celebrity used to be like.
Completely.
One of my favorite lines about celebrity I've heard recently was from Rob Lowe. I think he was on like Rogan or something, but he was like, you know, I look at the landscape now and he's like, I've been famous for a really long time.
Yeah.
He was like, I look at the landscape now and I think, why would anyone want to be famous anymore?
Why?
Who wants the trouble? Like, he's like, it used to be kind of fun. Yeah. It's not anymore. He's like, it feels like that's another job. You don't just have to do the thing and then you go out and people are like, hey, good job.
No, being famous is a job.
Yeah.
That's literally what influencers are. It's just being famous. Wild. You're being paid to be famous. It's very strange. It's unfortunate to me, I think, that the lines have been blurred so much between performance and artists and actors and influencer world, because they are not the same thing, and yet they've somehow been put in the same box, and it's very disheartening at times to be in a world where I've noticed now there's been, you know, requests and or, you know, projects out there where you're just like, oh, we're kind of looking for this type of person. You're like, you mean you're looking for a TikTok star?
Right.
You're looking for somebody who can do a bit for 90 seconds max.
Right.
That's who you want to run an entire show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure. Like, good luck. I don't know what else to tell you. And it's a bummer because, like, sure, everybody can do whatever they want and studios can do whatever they want. But it does feel, it's like, what a waste to be in the last 3 years to have been in the height of production and the height of quote unquote creativity in a TV and film space, and to have so much of it wasted on material and people who were just in it to, you know, get a bang and a buck.
Yeah. I think that's what's really tough about, and again, I'm going to kind of relate it to reality TV because I see it in both ways. And I think this is true about everything in America, honestly, especially art. You know, making art for art's sake and making it good mm-hmm. for the sake of making it good is not valuable to people in this country that have all the money. And it's frustrating sometimes because you can look at other places, like you said, like you look at places like Russia, or you look at places like, I was just talking to somebody earlier today about, someone was talking about why so many great actors per capita come out of like England. You're like, man, all the great actors are British. There's like not that many people there, really. You think about it.
Truly.
And it's like, well, the country subsidizes the arts. They say to their citizens, we find you getting good at artistic things valuable.
Yeah. You can be alive and also do this thing.
Right. And it's it's unfortunate because obviously if you want to get rich doing it, you've got to come here. You're not going to get super rich being an actor in England by the numbers. You got a much better chance leaving and maybe even putting on an American accent and being a superhero or something.
I'm gonna start doing their accents.
Right?
I'm gonna reverse this thing on them. I'm coming for all their jobs.
Honestly, you know what my take on it is? And I say it sometimes ironically, but I'm like, why not take this stance? I think there's definitely a line where we're like, these people probably shouldn't tell these stories when there's these people who could tell those stories because they're closer to it.
Yeah.
I think there is a thing. I think there's something in that thought and worth talking about. But I also think part of being a storyteller is telling the stories of not you, of other people.
That is literally, I think that is so hugely a part of being a storyteller.
And so while I'll agree on we shouldn't, I'm not going to put blackface on. I also think the idea of me personally as a bisexual man, if I want to play a character that's only gay, I don't think I'm taking a job away from a gay person when I do that.
No.
So that's like my spectrum of where I think that is.
And as somebody who's also, if I were to identify as just a lesbian, I'm also bisexual, but if I were to just be a lesbian, I would be real pissed if I wasn't allowed to be a straight woman on TV.
Right.
I do understand. I'm fully aware of the issues with the inclusivity of casting and opportunities. But at the same time, when you come from a more conservatory art, like an art driven, creation driven background, the whole point of that study is to have the world be at your fingertips and to be able to cultivate anything that you put your mind and your passion to. So to be told all of a sudden that I'm just not allowed to do that now because of these, you know, constructs that we've put in place. I'm like, that's absurd. That's not why I became an artist.
And if you take away if you take away the study of it. So here's the problem that I have with it specifically. It's not because I want to see some straight dude be gay in a movie and don't take that from me. It's not about that. There are performances like Robin Williams in the fucking Birdcage that if you try to take away from me, I'm gonna kick and scream.
Down your house. I'm gonna burn like, it down.
So I do have my specific examples. However, the callback our conversation, but it's not about that. It's about the thought that let's use that example. When Robin Williams was at Juilliard, if his professors had said, "Don't bother trying to experience or embody or empathize with a gay part. Don't spend any time on that because, Robin, you're straight. You're never going to play a gay man. You don't need to spend time on that. So we're only going to cast you in straight parts. We're only going to cast the gay people in gay parts." You're removing the empathetic touchstones that are why we're attracted to the art form in the first place. The thing that makes it beautiful, that draws us together, that that says later when we leave that play, that movie, that role, whatever, I'm not saying I can experience life like you did. I'm not saying that, but I've certainly spent a little time trying to wrap my brain around what your experience might be. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think almost semi-counterintuitively, like the fun part about that experience of watching, you know, a quote unquote straight man do this is it does, when you try to commercialize it and when you do try and bring something to a broader audience that is going to speak to people in, you know, Arkansas or North Carolina or the middle of nowhere, to have a reference point of someone that they deem like them, able to portray in a way that they can digest, which is a horrible way to describe being able to accept someone. But
shit, are we trying to get something done or make it easy to talk about?
Exactly. So when having that as a tool, which I hate to describe it as a tool, but like having that in the wheelhouse of storytelling, I think is vital.
Yep.
And I think stripping that away and kind of placing shame and pressure on it is, it's unfortunate. Like, it's just, it kind of takes some of the magic out of it. I don't know. In my mind, it's like, it takes some of that aha moment
where I refuse to believe we're better off with more careful artists.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. It's, and I think we are in a moment of revolution in that sense, where I think we've tipped very deep into the careful, thoughtful artist, which is not to say that there's not a place for that. There absolutely is. But I think that a lot of us who were, you know, taught and live in a different way are sort of revolting against that concept now in a very kind way. But we're still very, I know a bunch of my friends who I consider to be fantastic artists, we've all just like kind of been to this like friction point where we're just like, I can't fucking do this anymore. Like I need to do something real.
This feels like a fun transition. I know you got to go soon, but I want to talk about this like parody podcast thing that you're doing.
So ridiculous.
I do a splash of research, so I didn't look deep, but I checked a few things and I love this character. I love this character so much. And it feels like, and tell me if I'm wrong, an expression of some of that frustration that you've had recently with how your job, your work, your art is tied to this word, this business, this time in our culture and all of that. And it kind of shows up in this. I don't want to explain it for you.
No, I know. I always love when people do see it and whatever experience they have with her, because for me, it's like the whole idea behind creating that particular persona was just a way to sort of like exercise the worst actory parts of me. Mm-hmm. Like all of these weird thoughts that you have.
Actor supervillain.
Yeah, no, completely. Like in my mind, because, you know, I think at heart.
And it's called Actor with a Podcast?
Actress with a Podcast.
Actress with a Podcast.
Actress with a Podcast. It's literally just a way for me to take all of those thoughts that we naturally have as people who have had to monetize their creativity and have either gotten wrapped up in, you know, some part of Hollywood or the other, and just kind of been swept away with it. And it's just like, it's a silly way to get all those thoughts out. And to sort of, honestly, she's like the way I like to describe her is, and I fully see her as a whole other human being than myself. She's just a daft, like genuine, she cares about this craft, the craft of actressing. It's not even act. It's like not even the acting craft. It's the craft of being an actress, which is the publicity and the showbiz of it all. Like she considers that her craft, which is so absurd to me. And so I think it's like in sort of taking on that as a persona, it's allowed me to, again, gain some empathy for people who do view their lives that way, because I'm starting to realize in the ridiculousness of doing it, I'm like, there really is, there's always this genuine part of you that you're trying to fill. And this character, I think what makes her so funny is that she is so desperately at all times trying to fill whatever thing is inside of her that is an actress. And she's trying to like just stick all these things in her little actress hole and they're never getting filled. But it's also just simple. I like it too, because it's like I've learned more than anything, and it goes back to like the Robin Williams era of it all. simplicity is funnier than anything in the world. When you break down the joke or you break down the beat to the simplest thing it can possibly be, like the core of what you're trying to get across, it makes everything better. Mm-hmm. And she is so simple that I think that's what maybe resonates with a lot of people who have seen it, where it's just, she's not trying to do anything else and just be exactly who she is. And she is an actress. And that is all she is.
Like, it is such a fun character. And it is such, I think it's a good lesson. Like, if you get a chance, like, role play as your villains, yeah. You know, if you can, whoever it is, because I think that was one of the first things that I asked in acting school when I was at School of the Arts, when I was in DMP, but then I moved to drama. And so I felt like I had to do all this catching up. And so second year acting, I had all these, like, I felt like they were stupid questions, but I was like, well, I'm paying for this. And I don't know. I wasn't here. So I have to ask this stupid shit that you probably talked about last year. And one of them was, what do you do about villains? What do you do about people that are just purely like despicable? And obviously you're going to try to understand where they're coming from, but like, how do you get inside that? And I can't remember. I think I talked to a few people about it, but I think it was like Caroline Cava or somebody told me, but she was like, well, you don't play villains.
Yeah. Villains aren't villains.
They're people. You just play people.
Yeah.
And let everyone else decide if you're a villain. What do they want and what are they doing? It's that simple acting shit. It's not more complicated than that.
It's so true.
And when you start to think of people that way, not just characters of like, oh, well, you're not villains. There's somebody who wants something and they're trying to get it done.
Yeah.
Even the most atrocious person you can imagine. I'm not even going to put anything in anyone's head.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, think of the person you find the most despicable that's alive, because I don't want you to use Hitler. It's a cop out.
Yeah.
Think of a thing.
That's too easy.
Think of someone right now that you're like, man, if I saw him, I'd punch him in the face, and I've never met him. Someone like that.
Yeah.
Think for a second. They absolutely, like everyone else alive, they're a person who just wants something that they believe is the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're doing the right thing. They really do.
Yeah.
They have different information than you.
And in my mind too, even when people know that they're not doing the right thing, that to take action and do something that you know is not the right thing is so deeply embedded in a longing for some answer you're searching for.
Yes.
If you are actively going against your conscience to do something that you know is bad and acting against someone and doing behaviors that you know are not correct, like the psychology behind that to break down, and that is, I think, a large portion of the country right now is sort of at odds with each other just for a myriad of reasons. And to use that sort of mindset on scenarios in which you are talking to someone who you just see as so your adversary in something. It's a bit of a mind fuck, and you kind of have to like grapple with yourself, because when you realize that deep down inside, we're literally all just people trying to find answers to things. And we all just want the answer to the thing that we're asking.
Right.
That's literally all we're
doing. Which is not to say, and I feel like my brain takes this for granted, but let me say it. That's not to excuse anything.
No,
it's not to let anyone off the hook. I'm just saying it's a good mental practice.
Absolutely.
To spend some time trying to at least get like,
if you do some shitty shit, that's on you. But I do think that there is something, and I think this is why, again, like the idea of acting and being a quote unquote villain is so fun, is because it's like, how do I make this person good? Like, how, this is a good person in my mind.
Right.
Like, how do I get in that mindset of understanding where someone comes from? And that's,
like, if you really sat down and let them write the script, they would, there'd be something there that you're like, well, shit. You know, people are people.
I bet if I let AI write the script for a villain, AI would be like, I'm just a person. I'm a good person.
Right. Like, wait, is this you?
Is this you,
Siri? Or is this, what is, like,
wait a minute.
Try to convince me you're good. Now I'm starting to think I'm not even, I've lost myself in a meta loop here.
Yeah. Our brains are just starting to fry slowly.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. This was super fun.
Absolutely. Flew by.
Yeah, it did. Wow. Very quickly. Any final thoughts, parting words?
I don't think so. I mean,
advice to yourself when you were 20. That's one of my new favorite ones I heard.
Advice to myself when I was 20.
No time to think. You got a 30-second window to tell them. Time portal's going to close.
Just fucking do it.
Just fucking do it.
Just fucking do it. Honestly.
That's what you needed to hear?
That's what I needed to hear. Just fucking do it. Like, I don't know. This will be my closing argument.
Yeah.
There are so many things in our lives that, like, as me especially, because I'm a planner to a T and I overthink everything. Like, if someone could just push me off every single mental ledge I've put myself on and just made me fucking do it. And it's usually me. I need to make
myself
do it.
Tired of doing yourself. Yeah.
Like, I there's so many things that I look back on now, even from the last like year or 2 years. And I'm like, why didn't I just do it? I could have done that. I very easily could have just done that and did it. It might not have gotten me anywhere, but at least I would have done it. And it would have been some expression of myself. So yeah, just do it. Even if, worst case scenario, you are where you are. You're there anyway, so.
I think that's really good advice. And I think most of the people in my life, especially my family that I wish I could give advice to, it's that.
Yeah.
Like, what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
Stop fucking waiting.
Indecisiveness is the bane of my existence.
Make a choice to deal
with
it.
In myself and other people. If it it's gotten to a point where I'm like, I need to pace myself when I see someone being indecisive because I look like an asshole. But it really is. Like, I'm just like, just make a choice and just run with it. Like,
yeah.
Just
deal with the consequences. Yeah. You'll get more out of it dealing with it, even if it was the wrong choice, than if you sit there waffling around.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's it. That's what I tell myself then, now, probably tomorrow, probably when I'm on my deathbed. Just do it.
Timeless advice.
Timeless advice.
Thanks, Brianna.
Thank you.